Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of Beers with Chad. Today I am joined by Bellator MMA fighter Naaman Gracie. Of course, the famous Gracie last name. Naaman has trained with John Donahue and Gordon Ryan and Henzo Gracie, now out here in California at Kings MMA. Fighting in Bellator for the last 8 years, the last 10 years as a professional MMA fighter. So Naaman and I talk about his upbringing in the famous Gracie family and, you know, maybe some of those little jiu-jitsu tournaments between the Gracie cousins, you know, on the carpet after Christmas dinner, then moving to the United States, living here in Southern California, living in New York, helping his dad, Marcio Stamboski, start his school in Connecticut, some funny stories that go along with that, and then a lot about his MMA career and his journey through jiu-jitsu and MMA, thoughts that he has about the sport, the techniques, his evolution as a fighter. So I've known Naaman for the last 4 years, great guy, you know, a great husband, dad, fighter, you know, just a great, great person to be around. So a lot of fun to have him on today. As always, Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. So you can get totally custom training designed for your needs that adapts with your feedback. And you can use code BEERS by going to juggernautai.app and save on your subscription there. No beers to drink today, though, because I got to go to jiu-jitsu after this, and Naaman doesn't drink anyways. But virtual air cheers to all you fine folks. I hope you enjoy the episode. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review.
Welcome to Beers with Chad.
Naaman, so great to see you, brother.
Here we are.
It has been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I'm always around.
I know. One of the longest times probably that I haven't seen you, Poppy.
Yeah, since like I built my own gym at my house, you know.
Everybody be having their own juggernaut gym in the garage gym.
We have a little one. Yeah.
I know. You did that. Pipoca did that. Furao did that.
Yeah.
And now I'm stuck with just Danilo coming.
Oh, man. So we left him for you, you know? Yeah. He's all yours now.
Before, I had no Danilo in my life, and now I have only Danilo
full-time
in my life.
Oh, man.
I don't know if that's ever a good deal. So how you been doing? How's training going?
Great. Everything good and almost ready to get back to it. So I'm already started camp, and I'll be back fighting really soon.
So in April, end of April, hopefully?
Yeah, it should be end of April, yeah.
So, where are you on the Gracie family tree?
I'm on the crazy side.
The crazy side.
Yeah, I'm on the Henzo side, half Hawaiian. So my great grandfather Carlos Gracie had 21 kids.
21 kids. All right.
So his second child.
That wasn't with one mom.
That's impossible. That couple.
That would have been a very busy lady.
That was with a couple wives. But my grandfather is Hobson Gracie. That's Master Carlos Gracie's second son. And my grandfather had also 12 kids. And the most well-known kids that he had was Henzo, Ralph, Ryan. And then the grandkids, it's me, Kira. And now my cousin Hiram is doing really good too. So we come from that lineage over there, you know.
So growing up, which family members were you closest with, you know, closest in age or spent the most time with?
Yeah, like closest in age was me and my cousin Chiron. He's Master Carlos' son. And we used to live in the same neighborhood in Brazil and train at the same gym. So, and we are the same age. So we were best friends when we were kids, you know. Mm-hmm. So I always been around Master Carlos, and after that, I start being more around Henzo too. So those guys are being the guys that have been stuck to it more, you know.
And so your mom is Gracie, and your dad, Marcio Stamboski, is a coral belt.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
are there degrees in coral belt?
I don't think so. I think coral belt should be the last one. I'm not even sure because the coral belt is a new thing.
Uh-huh.
Because back in the day, it used to be black belt. Then after black belt, it used to be...
Red belt?
The coral belt. Now, after the Cora belt, my father now is a white and a red belt.
All right. So beyond coral belt.
Yeah. So they made the white and a red belt and then the red belt. So I don't know how long it takes, what it takes, but it's a long time, you know?
Like you got to be old.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So obviously your dad, well-known jiu-jitsu badass, has got his schools there in the East Coast.
Yeah.
But some of the stories you've told me about your mom,
yeah,
I think your mom really the toughest one in the family.
Yeah, it's like I said, from the crazy side. So my mom is sisters with Hanzo, Ralph, and Hyan, so she couldn't be much different than that, you know. So I have a couple funny stories with my mom. My mom is pretty tough. She got in a couple fights before, you know, but right now she's more relaxed. So,
well, growing up,
yeah,
you're in Brazil. If there's, you know, I don't want you to embarrass your mom. I don't know that she's going to listen to this.
Yeah.
But what's one story that stands out to you about your mom growing up?
Oh, boy. Here we go. Really? Okay. <Yeah. laughs> So my mom, one time I woke up and I knew she was having problems with the upstairs neighbor because of a parking spot. And then I woke up with people screaming like everywhere, like crazy. And I woke up and I went outside towards the scream. And when I went to see what was happening, my mom was mounted on the upstairs neighbor. Uh-huh. And she was punching him. And people was trying to get her off. And she was pissed off saying, "Don't touch me. I'm the woman. Uh-huh. You guys got to take him off." But they say, "Hey, we got to protect him. You're killing him." You know? But, man, she got the parking spot after that.
I bet she did get the parking spot.
Yeah.
After that.
She never trained jiu-jitsu, but she knew exactly what to do.
Yeah.
She took the guy down, mount the guy, put some hooks behind him, and start punching him. And, man, they took her out of there. Thank God, you know? Then the guy was all bruised, all marked up, and the guy went home. And she called my dad. My dad was at work. "Hey, the upstairs neighbor beat me up. Come home right now." My dad went home pissed off. Mm-hmm. He knocked on the guy's door and he went there to beat the guy up. But the guy's wife showed up and said, "Hey, you guys are not done yet. Look at him." Then he put his face like this. He's all beat up. And my dad looked at him and felt bad for him and said, "Hey, man, don't mess with my wife anymore or I'll beat you up." And after that, we never had a problem anymore.
Yeah, I bet you wouldn't. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you don't have to formally train jiu-jitsu probably when your siblings are Hanzo and everyone.
Actually, if you watch, because it happens before, like with my dad also was having a problem with a neighbor on the side of his academy because of a parking spot. Same thing.
Parking situation is not taken lightly in Brazil.
Actually, this was here.
Okay.
And we have this in video. So what happened was one of the parents parked right in front of the guy's business. And the guy came out pissed off yelling at the parent. But the parent never trained jiu-jitsu before. He just goes there, take his kid, and he watches the class. So the guy came out screaming at him and tried to get in a fight with him. He took the guy down, mount the guy. The guy turned, he put on a choke. And he never trained jiu-jitsu before in his life.
Yeah.
So just from watching, he learned a lot, you know.
So when growing up in your family, I mean, as a baby,
yeah,
do they even use diapers or is it just straight into the gi?
No, actually, everybody gets a little gi to take a picture, you know. But everybody trains. It's crazy. Yeah, and everything starts like a game. They don't force you to do it, you know. But like with my father, since my father has been a black belt before I was born, every little game at the house was around jiu-jitsu. So like, "Hey, get my back." And then I stay on his back. "Show me the arm bar." So everything was a game around jiu-jitsu, you know.
Would they have at like, you guys are all having Christmas dinner together, the big family, would your dad and your uncles and stuff have all of their sons and be like,
many times
we're gonna have a little children's jiu-jitsu tournament here
many times. And I remember in Brazil my dad had a store, like a clothing store, and many times, man, like fighters used to go there and they start showing moves on the floor on the store. And when you see they are rolling and we're taking the clothes, like the t-shirts to the side and people rolling on the floor of the store, and somebody show up to buy a shirt, and they, what the hell is going on here? And say, hey, please come back later. And they rolling on the floor, you know. Like most of my jujitsu, actually, I learned on the carpet in my house with my father, you know. Because my father, he wasn't teaching jujitsu in Brazil. He trained jujitsu, like he got his black belt in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. But he stopped teaching jujitsu and doing jujitsu. So I used to train at Gracie Barra in the mornings. And at night, when my father come back from his work, I used to have a lot of questions. So he used to give me privates in the carpet at the house. So the next day, I could try the moves that he showed me at the gym in the morning, you know. So most of my jujitsu I learned at my house in the carpet, you know.
And when you say training at Gracie Barra, you're training at the Gracie Barra.
Yeah, the first one, the HQ in Brazil, yeah.
And that's... Barra da Tijuca?
Barra da Tijuca,
Tijuca.
That's the neighborhood that we all grow up. Me, Chiron, everybody, you know?
All right.
Yeah.
If someone, you know, listening to this, watching this, and they're new, starting jiu-jitsu, what advice do you have for new?
For new, I'll say to look to find a good gym. Meaning, like, you don't need to train with world champions in jiu-jitsu to be good, you know, but to get to know who's going to be a teacher, you know, and this is, I think, is really important. And if I have one tip that I could give is to start with the basics, you know, learn the basics really well, like how to get off on the mount, like a little things, then you should really... go hard after that. But on the beginning, start with the basics. They're going to save your life from white belt to black belt, you know?
I know. My first day at jiu-jitsu, you know, I'd known Furao and these guys for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, oh, probably 8 years or so before I ever did jiu-jitsu. Well, I
mean, it should be a black belt by now.
I didn't. You know, they used to tell me back in the day, because I start with Furao and Chiron and Honish, another one of your cousins and stuff, back in like end of 2009, beginning of 2010. Gigantino, Piano, those guys were the first guys, and then the little bit younger guys came after them. And they'd always be, hey, coach, you gotta train, you're gonna smash everybody. But I didn't want to back then, because I didn't want to hurt my elbow or something, mess up my
lifting. And you definitely get hurt, you know? Look at your eye.
And this is, I mean, I get so many black eyes for jiu-jitsu.
It's true.
And it's like, you know, my eyes are obviously my best feature. Like, I'm not particularly handsome, but I have beautiful eyes.
They are going at your best thing, trying to take that off, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta watch out, man.
So, but when I finally did start jiu-jitsu in 2017, end of 2017, then Furao's first advice to me was basically to train like I was weak.
Yeah.
You know, because I think...
Yeah, that must be hard for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, what can I do instead?
What do you mean weak? What is that?
I can't be flexible instead. Yeah. I can't. But I think as an idea of, like, you know, don't just power through the moves.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
You know, trying to do them with as little.
Easier said than done, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
But like I said, like you got a good teacher since the beginning. You know, Furao is amazing. So you got a good one, and that helps a lot. I think I saw Joe Rogan talking about this before. Like, if you're going to look for a jiu-jitsu teacher, look for like a little guy, lightweight, because that guy really going to be able to teach you the technique and everything, you know? If you look like a guy like Chad, it's going to be a little harder for you because he's going to try to teach you how to smash people. You might not be that strong to be able to smash everybody, you know?
Yeah, and Furao does a good job of not, you know, he's not trying to get me to do barambolos and stuff.
Yeah, of course. So this is important.
There is a video of me out there doing a pretty nice barambolo.
No way. I never seen that video.
I'll look. I'm going to have to scroll back a while for it, but I'm going to find it for you. So you started training jiu-jitsu like more formally right about 7 years old.
Yeah, more like going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like around 5, 6, yeah. And that's how I met Chiron. I didn't meet him with the family.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because the family is so big. And so I went to, I went to Gracie Barra. I was already a yellow belt because I was training at Gracie Maita, which is another gym, Royalist gym. And I got my yellow belt there. Then I went to Gracie Barra. Then I trained, I did the class. I was a little kid, and the little kid stopped by my side And we were talking, and I said, hey, man, do you know what? I'm a Gracie, I told him. And he's like, oh, really? I'm a Gracie, too. He said, I said, what? I'm your cousin. Then we met each other, and we became best friends after that, you know?
Well, I guess, you know, with 21 kids and then 12 kids. I mean,
crazy, man.
Yeah, there's so many cousins out there. It'd be hard to know them all.
The other day, I met a cousin of mine that I didn't know, you know?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, crazy.
So when you go to like a juvenile blue belt tournament in Brazil, especially when you were a kid, when you were, 14 or 16 years old back then.
Yeah, 16.
I guess you could look at the bracket and there's like, man, there's like 8 Gracies in this thing, you know?
No, actually, that never happened. I never fought like on the same tournament or against a family member, you know? But definitely, there being tournaments that a bunch of my cousins were there and it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So when you moved to the U.S., when did that happen?
I was around 18. I was training at Gracie Barra one day. And that day I had an amazing training. I was doing really good. And I saw that Master Carlos was looking at me. You know, Master Carlos was looking. And he never paid too much attention because so many people around. But that day he was paying attention to me. I said, okay. And I did a good training. So after training, he said, hey, man, come here. I said, yes. Do you have a passport? I said, yeah. Do you have American visa? I said, I do. All right. Do you want to come stay with us in California? Kaido needs a friend there. He's by himself. I said, of course, man. I'm doing nothing here. Just training and going to the beach. That would be a pleasure. So he took me here when I was 18. And I came here to live with Master Carlos. And it was amazing. I stayed for like 6 months.
And this is training in the very, very first Gracie Barra.
Yeah, in Lake Forest. Lake Forest. The very first one. Yeah, yeah. And everybody was here. Marcio was here. Flavio, everybody. And we used to leave everybody on the same house, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice. And I stayed 6 months because at the same time, my father got an opportunity to come open his gym here in America. But his gym is in Connecticut. So when my father came, I said to Master Carlos, I got to go help my dad because he's by himself, you know. So I left to Connecticut and started helping my dad there. I stay again like 1 year with my dad until his academy start to do better, you know. Then I start to need better training. And then I went to Hansel's in New York and I stayed there for like 12 years.
So when you moved, Were you already starting to train some MMA in Brazil before you moved?
So when I moved to MMA in my life was something that I always wanted to do. Like when I was a kid, I used to go like, not Halloween because you don't have Halloween in Brazil, but it, like something that you got to dress up. I used to put a gi and think that I was Royce, you know, because I always wanted to do MMA. But I trained in Brazil a little bit of Muay Thai here and there, but nothing serious. But really, I started training MMA when I moved to New York to train with Hanzo, you know, because my older cousins that lived there, they were already doing MMA. And I was like 19 years old.
And those were like Igor,
Hollis, and Gregor. They were already fighting. And then I was just following their footsteps. Like they go to boxing and go with them. They go to wrestling and go with them, you know. And I start training there. And I end up having my first fight on the same card as Hollis and Gregor. So we all fought on the same card years later, you know.
So when I was, doing some extra research and stuff before we talked today, one thing I noticed about your jiu-jitsu competition record was that you were going down in weight classes over time.
Yeah.
Which is a bit rare. So I know that, the svelte athlete, Brazilian tiger type of athlete I see in front of me right now, when you were a kid, you were not as agile, right?
No. I was a little chubby, you know? And especially when I moved here to America, because people don't know this, but like in Brazil, McDonald's, it's a place for like rich kids to go. And I didn't have much money in Brazil, so I always wanted to eat a lot of McDonald's, but I couldn't. I didn't know that was actually a good thing, you know? So when I moved here, man, all I wanted to eat was McDonald's. So I gained like 15 pounds. So when I moved here, I was a purple belt. And my first tournament here, I fought at a medium heavy. Then my second tournament, I fought a super heavy, you know? And I kept fighting a super heavy until I moved to New York and I started eating better and training more. Then I started going down again. And, right. Yeah.
So I, one of the other things that had to be a bit of a culture shock to you moving from, I mean, Brazil to Southern California, you know, Rio to Southern California is one thing. But when you get to New York and Connecticut,
crazy
the winter there. And one of my favorite stories you've ever told me is about...
No, forget about that one.
You got to tell it.
Jump. Let's go another one.
That story is the best.
Okay, you can tell it.
This is this is all friends. This is the tree of trust here.
Come on, man.
And this is a wonderful story.
Oh my God.
So you get to Connecticut and it's so cold and then your English is still not great.
I should look what and talk to him before this to see what he was going to ask.
You know? But you didn't do that. So
I already talk about my mom getting to fight. What else? God damn.
So it's very cold there, and you don't have great English.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Oh, Chad, all right. So I moved to Connecticut, and then it was really cold out there. I never seen a cold like that. And man, my hands were freezing because I didn't have gloves. So I asked one of the students that was a great friend of mine, and he was a very funny guy, that if he could help me buy some, I didn't know how to say, like, you know, my hands cold. Like, I didn't know how to say gloves. And he said, oh, hey, man, don't worry. I'll take you to the store. When we get there, you talk to the guy. I'll talk to the guy and we will get you something. I said, okay. So we went to the store. Once we get there, he told me, no, you have to speak because you got to learn English. So I'm not going to say anything.
That's a good friend.
I say, all right, but how do you call that thing that you put on your hands to warm your hands? He said, man, we call that dildos. I said, oh, dildos, okay. So you go to the guy and you say, hey, can I have some dildos, please? Man, I went to the store and my English was very bad. And I said, hey, please, can I have some dildos? And I even make the sign like this. And man, the guy like didn't understand and everybody started laughing. And I knew I was up into something. But in the end, I got gloves, so I was fine.
I love that story. I want to meet that friend of yours.
Oh, man.
I got to meet that guy.
Crazy guy.
Today's episode of Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you want the smartest program for you, fully customized, adapts to your feedback, grows as you grow as a lifter, visit juggernautai.app and use code BEERS to save on your monthly subscription.
Getting to New York and beginning to focus more on MMA training, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced in transitioning jiu-jitsu competition into MMA?
Definitely learning striking. I think that's the biggest challenge that every jiu-jitsu guy will get. You know, it's like getting punch and getting used to getting punch because, as you know, jiu-jitsu, there's no punching, you know. So in the beginning was tough. And my cousins were bullish, so they used to beat me up a lot, you know. But I fell in love with it, so wasn't hard. Wasn't easy, but it wasn't really hard because I was really in love with it. And I always wanted to do that, so I really commit myself to it. And I started learning striking. And I think what helps, too, that my jiu-jitsu style, the jiu-jitsu style that I learned with my dad and with the whole family, was really good for fighting, you know. Wasn't really sport jiu-jitsu. It was more like a close guard and types of guard that you don't get hit and ways to pass more tight to the guy. And those things helped me in MMA. So I think the toughest thing was learning striking, but at the same time, it was pretty fun too, you know, to learn something new.
Why do you think more high-level jiu-jitsu guys who are very successful, whether gi or no gi competitors, mm-hmm. but they're not successful making the transition to MMA?
Yeah, it happens a lot, you know. I think it's because those jiu-jitsu guys, they were very focused on competition jiu-jitsu, and that's much different than the jiu-jitsu we're really going to use for fighting, you know. So I think that's a problem number one. Problem number two, I think, is the wrestling. Like, some of them are just guard players, so it's going to be hard for them to do guard in MMA, you know. So you got to really learn how to take people down. and learn how to strike. But I see a lot of people getting really focused on striking, and I think we jiu-jitsu guys should be more focused on wrestling, you know? I think that's one thing.
I mean, not every Gracie has the knockout power.
Oh, yeah.
That was really cool when you got that knockout.
Yeah, that was cool. But it was a trap, too, because I wanted to get a knockout after that, and all my fights became like striking wars, you know? Yeah. But it was cool for sure.
So as you look at your MMA career, do you have a fight that stands out as like your favorite fight?
Yeah, definitely. Like two or three fights that were really cool, you know. When I was coming up, I think I was like 8-0. Yeah, I was like 8-0, and then I got into a tournament. And that's pretty new for someone, like only 8-0 to get into a tournament with guys with 20, 30 fights, you know. And they put me up against a wrestler that was really good. His name is Ed Ruth.
Ed Ruth, yeah, and, 3-4-time All-American at Penn State.
Yeah, he's NCAA champion too. So that fight was really cool because he didn't run away from the grappling. He wanted to get into grappling, and it was an amazing fight, you know. And this is one of my favorite fights. Another fight was when I fought for the title, was really cool too. I fought Rory McDonald, and we fought 5 rounds. It was a good fight too. I learned a lot. And another one was against John Fitch, which was an amazing fight because I always watched John Fitch when I was coming up, when I was going up, you know. Actually, my second pro fight, he did the main event, I think. And I was sharing the locker room with him, you know. And I never imagined that I was going to face him one day, you know. And I watched him warm up and do everything. And years later, we ended up fighting, and it was a great fight also, you know.
And what fight was it that 50 Cent came to visit?
Was you? The one with the wrestler. Yeah, that was...
With Ed Ruth?
Yeah, with Ed Ruth, yeah. 50 Cent had something to do with Bellator back then. And I remember that after the fight, they say, hey, 50 Cent wants to come and meet you. And he has like a champagne thing that he's selling or something. He wants to pop a bottle with you. I say, great. I don't drink, but great. Let him in, you know.
You didn't even drink some of 50 Cent champagne?
I didn't, man. And that guy was at the locker room. And he said, you're not going to drink that? I said, no. Can I have it? I said, it's all yours, brother. I just want some pizza, you know.
So your last fight you had, which was a year ago now, was here in LA at the Kia Forum.
Yeah.
And win by decision. But part of that was that it was Fedor's retirement fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were so, you know, I was right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Second row watching you.
Yeah.
And there were so many guys that came out for Fedor's, you know, Dan Henderson and Uncle Henzo and Randy Couture.
They bring a lot of guys.
Yeah. And all these legends, as you look back, especially coming up in MMA and as a kid, of non-family members, who was a fighter that you really looked up to?
Oh, a bunch, man. I used to be addicted to watching MMA. And back in my day, the biggest show was Pride, you know? So definitely Fedor was one of them. Nogueira was one of them. Many guys, man. Paulo Filho, Murilo Bustamante, a lot of people, you know. I used to love watching those guys. Wanderlei Silva. Pride was an amazing event, you know. I wish they could bring that back because it was really cool.
Did Pride do, was it tournament style or?
They had both. They had the tournament and they had just regular shows, you know. And the tournament was nice because it was two fights on the same day.
Okay.
So they have the semifinal and the final on the same day. And it was crazy, man. Really nice.
When you talk to Uncle Hoyce, does he like, oh, you guys today, you know, you only fight one time every couple months?
Yeah, yeah.
Did I fight three times in a night?
Yeah, that was definitely a tough time, you know. I remember one tournament that he got in, he fought Sakuraba the first fight, and the first fight was like a 2-hour fight, you know. Sakuraba ended up beating him, but Sakuraba came back and had another fight against a monster that was, I think, Igor Volchanchin. And he fought Igor Volchanchin for one round, and after one round, he said, man, I'm good. I've been fighting for 3 hours already. Leave me alone, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Pride was crazy, man. They could do whatever they want because here in America, if they want to do this, it might be a problem because of the boxing commissions and everything. But in Japan, you can do anything you want, you know, so crazy times.
And the fans for Pride, right? The huge stadium.
Yeah, like I think 50,000 people.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
And really, really loud, but then also like really respectful.
Yeah, actually, they say that even with all these people, they were so quiet watching that you could hear the fighters breathing, you know? They were only make noises if something happens. Mm-hmm. But out of that, man, you could hear the fighters breathing, everything. It was crazy.
So a lot of your MMA career, especially before you moved out here, was training at Hanzo Gracie.
Yeah, all of my MMA was there, yeah.
Yeah, and you're training with John Donahair and guys like Gordon Ryan and Gary Tonin and GSP.
Yeah, well, he was there all the time.
Yeah, so what are some, you know, important lessons you took for jiu-jitsu, for MMA, for life from a guy like John Donahair?
From John, I think, man, John is like a wizard, you know. I think what I take from him is that if you work hard and if you get yourself into like studying jiu-jitsu and whatever you do, you're gonna definitely get good, you know, because I used to see John stay all day in the gym. He used to teach a class at 7 in the morning. And then after that class, he used to teach a private. And after the private, he used to have another class at 12. Then after 12, he used to teach privates until like 5 p.m. And after that, he used to go and watch videos. I remember he used to watch videos all day of techniques and try to learn new things, you know. So I think what I learned from John is that studying is really important, even for martial arts, you know. And if you work hard, you can definitely improve. I learned that from John for sure, you know.
You know, Gordon Ryan is a guy who, you know, when people just see him as a competitor and his kind of persona on the internet.
Yeah.
How are your in-person interactions with Gordon Ryan, or maybe the real Gordon Ryan, different than what people see of him on the internet?
Yeah, I remember I met Gordon. He was like a teenager. I think he was 18 or 17. And he was like a purple belt. And I saw the whole thing. I saw his come up and he started taking over jiu-jitsu. And on the beginning, they used to talk a lot of trash in the internet. And I couldn't believe because Gordon at the gym was a guy that didn't speak much. But in the afternoon, when I opened Instagram or something, man, he was saying every kinds of thing. And man, is this for real? You know, like, is this guy doing that? And but he's really smart, you know, because he brings a lot of attention to him. But most important is that he not only brings attention, but he wins his fights, you know. So, and he always been tough. I remember first time I trained with him was with the gi. I was already a black belt. He was a purple belt. And man, I trained with him and he felt amazing. And I didn't know who he was. And I was talking to people at the gym, like, who the hell is this kid, man? And he was skinny. Who the hell is this skinny kid? He's amazing. He's really good. They say, yeah, he's Gary's student. They're coming to train here every day. I said, man, this kid's going to be good. And he's really good.
He is really good.
Yeah.
Was there anyone there in the blue basement or training at Henzo's maybe that doesn't compete at all?
How many? The blue basement is known for having tough guys that no one knows.
Who's one person that stands out in your mind of like, man, this guy could have been champion and he just chose not to compete, or maybe he's working on Wall Street or something?
Yeah, and most of guys like that, the problem is that I'm bad with names, but there was a couple guys.
We can just make up a name for him.
Yeah, no, there was one guy actually, but he's a jiu-jitsu teacher now. His name is Brian Glick. He's a John student for a long time, and Brian, it's like, he's really tough, and he's just like a regular guy, skinny guy, Jewish, all nice and quiet. But when people go to train with him, he used to kill them. But like him, there was a bunch, man. That was amazing. Like, I remember UFC guys used to go there train with us, and I saw a couple of them crying in the bathroom, like afterwards, you know, like, what the hell? I thought I knew jiu-jitsu, and like a regular guy was beating them up like bad, you know? So like, I saw them more than once.
Like that guy who just tapped you out, he gonna go work a,
exactly.
work a 16-hour day for exactly. Goldman Sachs now.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy, man.
Yeah. As you look at, because you still compete, you know, in grappling matches now, what do you think about the evolution of competitive jiu-jitsu from when you were a kid?
Oh,
you
know, it's huge.
To now.
Yeah.
What are the things maybe you like about it that you don't like about it as much?
I think that the trash talking today is different. I don't like that too much, you know. But back in the day, they used to have some also.
I've seen your Twitter. I know about your trash
talking. Me? Yeah. And, but I think that these days, like the trash talking... And but I feel that I lived the golden era back in the day of jiu-jitsu. So I saw amazing fights, you know, and I saw amazing guys fighting for nothing. They used to make no money with it, and today the money got better, and that's a good thing. And but definitely, I think the golden era was when I was a kid watching. You know, I remember they had a huge. A tournament of super fights at the beach in Copacabana. That's when Royce fought Valide with the gi.
Mm-hmm.
And in that day, they had a bunch of super fights.
Gi on the beach?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in that day, they had a bunch of super fights, and it was an awesome event, you know? So I was there to watch a bunch of those great fights, you know?
From a technical standpoint, as it's evolved, certainly the game now is very, very different.
Yeah.
Like, do you kind of miss the way that competitive jiu-jitsu technique was back then?
Actually, no. I think today's better, you know. There was a time back in the day that we didn't see a lot of submissions. There was a lot of stalling.
Mm-hmm.
With the Carlson guys used to be the champions, but they were big stallers, like stall a lot. And nowadays, you see a lot of cool submissions coming up, and we're seeing more no-gi. That's a different thing, because back in the day, there wasn't nobody was doing no-gi. No-gi was only taught on Fridays, you know, and then these days, we have no-gis every day at the gym. So that's another different thing. We're seeing much more no-gi coming up, you know.
Where would you stand in the sort of, I don't know if debate's the right word, but, you know, for a long time, it was thought like, To really do jiu-jitsu, you had to train in the gi.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the guys who were just a no-gi specialist was kind of like just a 10th planet.
Yeah.
Guy,
or maybe
the only guys. And as that's shifted, do you see gi jiu-jitsu and, like, how do you view the differences of gi jiu-jitsu and no-gi and the guys who do both or just one?
I still think that you got to learn gi first and then go to no gi. That would be better for you. And if you see if you see all the ADCC champions, most of them, like 90%, they all did gi first and then they went to no gi, you know? So I think it's really important to train with the gi, especially on the beginning, and then transition to no gi. But of course, you can do whatever you want, you know.
I know that you love training with the gi.
Actually, I like training with the gi a lot nowadays, you know.
Yeah, I come back and done it more.
Yeah, I've been doing much more, you know.
Yeah.
But it just pisses me off a couple positions that people do, like warm guards or those things mm-hmm. that really stall the game. And I just got pissed off when I'm training and they do that to me. Like, I look at them and say, man, what the hell are you doing? Like, I came all the way from my house here to get a sweat,
They're trying to survive. That's probably.
And you're just stalling, like, let's roll. Come on, man. Yeah. So, you know? So I don't like the stalling part of it, because I think it's easier to stall with the gi than without the gi, you know?
So I'd imagine the most influential person in your MMA career
mm-hmm.
has been Renzo Gracie.
Yeah, for sure.
So if someone, they never heard of Renzo Gracie.
Yeah.
How would you describe him?
Renzo is an amazing person, I think, you know, like you can see that in the ring too, but more outside of the ring. Like, he's a very amazing guy. Like, he will take his shirt off. If you say, hey man, this shirt looks nice. Oh, really? Do you like it? Boop, we take it off and gives it to you, you know? So he's just an amazing guy, and I love him, you know? So, great guy, and in the ring, he's a warrior. So, he's a guy that you can look up in and out of the ring. You'll be fine if you follow his footsteps, you know.
So I've trained at the Henzo Gracie in Manhattan two different times, mm-hmm. and met Henzo, and I was a white belt mm-hmm. then. And yeah, I mean, I met him and extremely welcoming yeah. right away. And this is before I knew you. And of yeah, course yeah. I knew Kyron and, you know, said I trained at Gracie Baja headquarters, but right away he's so warm and
yeah, I mean, he talks to you like he knows you from your whole life, you know, hey champ, how you doing? So
yeah.
Amazing, amazing person, you know. Definitely a guy that I want by my side in everywhere I go, you know.
Now, I'm not going to ask you for crazy Henzo stories.
Please.
Yeah.
I'll bring him here one day and he tells them, you know.
Yeah, he'll make it. Better. He'll make a crazy Henzo story.
Don't say that. Don't say that he's making things up, man. You're going to be in trouble.
No, I mean, like, he'll just create one right here.
I don't know if he's creating or if he's real, you know? You never know.
Yeah. So, with your MMA career now, you've been fighting for about 10 years as a professional.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, you and your wife had your first child.
Yeah.
Callie.
Yeah.
My favorite, my assistant coach yeah. sometimes. You know, and now you have two kids. I'd imagine fatherhood, you know, when you're fighting for a living,
yeah,
that becoming a father kind of changed your perspective about what you do. Like, how do you feel like fatherhood has affected you and your career as a yeah. professional MMA fighter?
I think it made me take even more serious than I was taking before, you know. If before I was just fighting for myself, now I'm fighting for my family, you know, my daughters, my wife. So it definitely changes you, you know, and that could be a good thing and that could be a bad thing too, because sometimes you don't want to fight, but you got to fight because that's the way we're making money and that's your work, you know. But it definitely make me better and a better person all around, you know. It affect me for the good, I think, because it make me take things more serious, I think.
Callie, ever been to one of your
fights? Yeah, she been to a bunch of them.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
You win them all? Or that she
yeah, I lost one that she was watching.
Which one was that?
Against Logan Starling, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, but she doesn't remember. She thinks I won that fight too, so.
Well, that was
leave it like that, you know?
That was a good one to forget, because that was a really boring fight.
Yeah. Crazy fight, that one, man.
That was a wrestler and a jiu-jitsu guy trying to do a boxing
yeah,
match.
Yeah, that was crazy. Crazy fight.
Was that the fight after you had gotten the knockout?
Yeah, okay. That was the one after, yeah.
That's
yeah,
when
yeah.
you were probably feeling
that's why, right? I'm going to knock him yeah. out again, you know? Yeah. yeah.
You were like naming
then, Gracie kickboxer. Then we did five rounds of just striking. Crazy, yeah. crazy. And everybody was expecting a grappling war, you know?
Yeah. I find that happens sometimes when it's like two wrestlers or two jiu-jitsu guys.
Yeah.
That they end up not wanting to go to the ground at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Yeah.
Why is that?
I think because one guy thinks he's much better than the other guy at striking. They say, yeah. oh, you're good at jiu-jitsu. I'm good at jiu-jitsu, but my striking is much better. And the other guy on the other side thinks the same too. Uh-huh. He doesn't have the same striking that I do, and they just stay standing and striking, you know?
And they'd like rather stay away from the other guy's strength. Too.
Yeah, the strength, and they might think they're better at striking than the other guy, you mm-hmm. know, and they just trying to prove the other guy wrong the whole time. At least that's what happened with me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So you've been with Bellator now for about 8 years,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And so Bellator was recently bought, merged, some.
Yeah, you know, with PFL.
Yeah, with the PFL. So how do you see that affecting your career or just, you know, what's next up for you in your MMA career?
I'm actually excited because I've been with Bellator for such a long time, and to change a little bit, things will be good, you know. So they gave us the option to either stay with Bellator and do Bellator shows or maybe go to PFL and get into the tournament, you know. So I decided to go with PFL, and I think I'm going to be with the tournament. And for me, that's going to be great because it's new, you know, it's a tournament, it's four fights in a year, and we're fighting at every like 2.5-3 months. So it's going to be different. And I think at this time in my career, already 10 years, having something different, it's good because it motivates me more, you know?
Nice. And then as you look, you know, beyond your MMA career,
mm-hmm.
What do you think you have in store, you know, teaching jiu-jitsu, coaching jiu-jitsu, or what are your plans as you look beyond your MMA career? You're 37 now, 36.
Come on, man. 35.
I
mean, 37.
Poor. Sorry. Yeah. I'm 37.
Yeah. You see?
How's your hair looking?
It's all good.
It is.
So just like a 28-year-old guy.
Jet black, I would call that hair.
Come on. Yeah, but I think that after I stop fighting, and for sure I'm going to stick with teaching jiu-jitsu, you know, I'm already looking to open my own gym, and I'm just want to find like the perfect spot to do it, because I already been teaching jiu-jitsu for such a long time. I started teaching jiu-jitsu when I was 18, when I moved here. And I be teaching like my whole life. And I only stopped after I moved to, on 2020, after I moved to California. So I definitely want to get back to it, you know, and open my own gym and have my students and try to pass on everything that I learned from the competition, you know. I think the best way to learn what works, what really doesn't work, it's putting yourself into the fire, you know, and doing that and competing for such a long time like I've been doing, I think I have a lot to teach to people, you know, and it's going to be amazing when it's finally time for me to open my gym, you know.
So for the first 6 years of your professional MMA career,
yeah,
you were teaching jiu-jitsu,
yeah,
pretty close to full time,
like every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to like spar in the morning, have sparring. And right after sparring, I take a shower and go teach a private. Then after that, go to boxing in the afternoon. And after boxing, I have a group class. So I was all day at the gym, you know.
I think there's a lot of people, you know, fans, and they watch the UFC or they watch Bellator. And they think these guys are professional athletes.
Yeah.
They're making a lot of money.
They have no idea. Yeah.
But most of the guys, probably, I think 70-80% of the guys are probably having to be in a situation
like that. Yeah, definitely. Especially coming up, you know, when you're coming up, you're making no money. Like with MMA, it's really, really hard, man.
What was your first professional fight? What was the money?
$3,000 and $3,000, which is not bad for like a regular guy. If you offer this to a guy doing his first fight, man, it's going to be amazing. But for myself, I remember I had like family members saying, man, you're crazy. You're going to fight for $3,000. No, you can't do that. You're going to shame the Gracie name, blah, blah, blah. I said, man, they paying me. I would fight for free. You know, like I'm doing this because I love. If I have to do this for free, I'll do it. If they want to pay me, great. I don't care how much it is, you know. So I never started because of the money. And I think nobody should start because of the money, because it's going to take you some time to make some money, you know? And yeah, definitely. Like most of the guys that I know, they train and they work. So most of them work at the gym teaching, but some of them work with other things, you know? I know a lot of guys that they do Uber and they train and they are Uber drivers, and it's a rough life, man.
It is. The money, you know, seeing what you guys go through and the amount that you train and how when you do a bodyweight squat, the sounds that your knees make, and when you move your arm, the sounds that your shoulders make and stuff. You know, if someone thinks, oh, I'm going to be at, you know, fight MMA and get rich.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of steps in between that. And it's
usually those guys don't stick for too long.
You know?
I see many guys come and go really fast. They have one fight, two fights and stop because they see how tough it is. It's a tough life. There's a bunch of injuries. That's, man, it's when you win, you're up here in the top of the world. When you lose, you feel like the worst guy in the world. You know, it's sometimes it can be the way that you lose, you can feel so ashamed, you know. So, man, it's a tough life.
So I had Cub on last week, and he said, he's like, you know, the most common record in MMA is 0-1.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then
that's true.
They quit after that.
Yeah, yeah.
He also talked, though, a lot about the mentality and the place you have to go to when you make that walk to the ring. And you're a guy sitting here, you know, I've known you for going on 4 years
now,
and if I didn't know that you were a professional MMA fighter, I would
most
never
guys they had no idea.
Yeah, I would never think like, oh, Naaman, that's Naaman's personality, because yeah. You just joke around. Yeah, and you're this goofy guy. Though I do remember us taking a picture one time and making the face off, and I saw your face change, and I was like, oh,
oh shit.
Yeah, but yeah. when you're getting ready to make that walk, what is that process for you like mentally?
Like I don't. There's different types and different people, you know. Some guys really like to get mad and like be pissed off. I just stay more like calm. I never think about like I want to hurt this guy, I want to kill him. I just think about like I want to finish this, you know. I want to finish this guy, so I stay more calm. I don't talk too much. Hanzo sometimes he wants to talk to me during the fight night. Uh-huh. Hey, why are you not speaking? I said, boy, Hanzo, I'm fighting 2 minutes. I'm jumping in a cage with a guy in front of millions of people watching. And how do you want me to be? And he's like, come on, man. I used to take a nap before fighting. So that's different personalities, you know. I think myself, I just stay more calm, try to stay relaxed and focus in what I will do. Like every time that I could do that, bring myself to that that state of being calm and focus in what I'm going to do, not thinking about everything that is outside. If I win this fight, I get this. If I lose... So I just thinking about that were the times that I had my best fights, you know. When I was there and I been mad before, like one or two fights that I really wanted to hurt the guy and that wasn't good. I been fights that was nice, the guy got hurt and I was nice to him and that wasn't good neither. So I think you gotta take yourself from the less emotions you have, the better, you know. The less emotions you carry yourself into the cage will be better, I think. At least for me, it's like that. If I have the emotion of kill and wanted to hurt him, it's bad. If I have the emotion of being nice to the guy, that's bad. So I rather have no emotion at all, you know? So
I don't think many people would go with the emotion of being nice to the guy.
Yeah, it's not nice that I mean, but I mean like, man, like if the guy get hurt.
Yeah, like overly.
I feel bad for hurting him. Like that happens sometimes, you know? But I think the less emotions you can carry into the cage, that's the best. And it's hard.
I think that, I mean, even jiu-jitsu, masters jiu-jitsu matches I'm getting nervous and anxious before those, you know.
You get nervous before jiu-jitsu too. It's just a different kind of nervous because there's so much with MMA, you know. Like you can get hurt. If you lose a fight, it's really bad. If I lose a jiu-jitsu match, it's not that bad. I go next weekend and try again, you know. But MMA, that stays in my record, that put me down on the line. My money is not the same, so it's just different. But once you go there, you got to forget about all of this and just focus on you and on the guy and how you're going to get that done, you know?
Well, I think your walkout song is very fitting to your attitude.
Yeah.
You know, so Eric B and Rakim, don't sweat the technique.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know.
That gets me in a good mood too, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of just like you're about your business and focused on your process, your technique.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not.
I believe technique is everything, so that song really gets me going, you know?
Yeah, like I could never imagine you walking out to like Slipknot or something and you're going all crazy. Yeah.
That's not me, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's just it's different. Loose and fun enough. And, yeah.
That's different personalities. I've been there like in a locker room with other fighters and I've seen everything, you know? I've seen guys mad punching the wall and seen guys yelling a lot, you know, and I think the champions that I saw, they were all nice and focused and no emotions, you know. I think most of the champions that have been there, like a guy like Fedor, I fought like 3 or 4 times on the same card, always like, you know, no emotions at all, you know.
Yeah, he definitely does not strike me as an emotional guy.
He's the one guy that if you see him on the street, you have no idea that he's a fighter, right?
Yeah, like he could be picking his kids up from soccer practice or something. And then,
exactly.
Yeah, going to fight for the title right after.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, Naaman, thanks so much, brother.
Thank you, brother. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, good to see you.
We didn't have the chance, but to talk about our training that we've been doing together. But back in the day in New York, I never did conditioning. I always just did training for fighting, you know. And since I moved here to California, I started doing conditioning with you. And that opened my mind for another way of training, you know, and it's been really, really good. And it's good to be a little stronger.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time today, buddy.
Of course.
I'm excited to see you in the ring.
All right. Let's go.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, man.